Hi, I'm Ariane Sparks. Welcome to The Hot Seat. With us today to discuss the recent assassination of Pakistani political leader Salman Taseer is Dr. Adnan Nazimullah. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Would you tell us a little bit about Salman Taseer and the motivation behind his assassination?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Salman Taseer comes from one of the big elite liberal families in Pakistan. He was actually the nephew of one of Pakistan's most celebrated poets, Faiz Ahmed Faiz, who was a communist. Taseer went to Government College Lahore, which is sort of an elite institution in Lahore that was set up by the British, and came to London to study chartered accountancy. In the 1960s, he got very involved with the kind of populist movement behind Zulfikar Ali Bhutto in the Pakistan People's Party, and has remained as sort of a close associate of the leaders of the PPP, including the late Benazir Bhutto and the current president, Asif Ali Zardari. He's also a very, very rich man. He started a group who did business consulting and accountancy. He established a cell phone network that is very popular in the country, and also published a newspaper. It's interesting because he is a political leader, but he's not been very successful in electoral politics. But in 2007, he was appointed in one of the last Musharraf cabinets as the Minister of Industries, and so after that was appointed Governor of Punjab, which was the position he held until he died. And he's been a pretty outspoken advocate on liberal causes, and especially in terms of religious minorities. He defended the Ahmadis, who are a sect that have been persecuted in Pakistan, and also religious minorities like Christians. The background for the actual assassination came when Salman Taseer personally intervened and investigated the case of Asia Bibi, or Asia Nareen is her proper name, who the Christian lower caste woman who was, or lower community woman who was prosecuted under the blasphemy law and was sentenced to death. And he had said that he would take up the case and actually ask the president to provide clemency. In so doing, he also made a statement that the blasphemy law was a so-called black law and should be repealed. And so when Taseer was just visiting a cafe in Islamabad, one that I know actually quite well, he, as he was leaving and entering the car, one of his bodyguards, a man by the name of Malik Mumtaz Qadri, shot him, I think, 7 times, and he died on the way to the hospital. Qadri's interesting because he, before joining this Punjab elite force that was supposed to take care of VIPs, he was, he comes from a pretty conservative family, but within a fairly liberal sect of Islam called the Bareilvis. So that's a little bit of background.
Thank you. Do you think his assassination highlights the ongoing battle between religious and secular forces in Pakistan?
I think it does. One of the saddest things to see, and a number of commentators have mentioned it, is the amount of sort of rhetoric in support of Qadri and his actions in the popular press, the vernacular press in Urdu, and in social networking sites like Facebook. Now, we have no idea how representative that is, but that has really worried people. But I think it's important to remember that the sort of clash between the secular and the religious is really just part of the identity of Pakistan. Pakistan was formed in 1947 and partitioning from India because a number of political leaders felt like a nation for Muslims will allow for Muslims to reach their full potential in terms of economic development and not be discriminated against in a Hindu-majority country. Now, those leaders mostly envisioned a Pakistan with kind of liberal constitutionalist values and no discrimination against religion. I mean, the Pakistani flag has a quarter is a quarter white, three quarters green, to represent at that point the 25% minority communities in Pakistan. Now that figure is 4%. But what has happened since then is that successive non-democratic, especially military governments, have used the orthodox Islamic leadership as a source of legitimacy. And that has especially peaked in the military regime of Zia-ul-Haq from 1979 until 1988, in which he established a number of institutions to intervene in social life and to put the Pakistani constitution and Pakistani laws in conformity with a very conservative interpretation of Islam. That included establishing the Federal Sharia Court, as well as a number of these laws passed by ordinance, not by parliament, including the blasphemy law.
Where do you see the country moving from here? Do you think this will lead to more polarization?
Unfortunately, I think it is. I mean, it's one event in a long chain of events, including sectarian violence between Sunni and Shia communities in the country, and the occupation of a library in 2007 by women seminarians, which led to a shootout in Islamabad in 2007. I think the two things that are worth paying attention to is, firstly, that the Islamic parties, the Islamist parties, are not particularly popular. In the National Assembly, there are the National Assembly of Pakistan, there are 340 seats. Islamist parties hold only 7 of them, as opposed to the PPP's 124. So it's a case in which Islamist parties have been able to take control of the rhetoric around what Pakistan's about, and especially to do with the religion, without necessarily popular support. And the second thing is the incapacity of the state and especially the judiciary to interpret and implement law in accordance with equality and fairness is a real problem. The blasphemy laws is a very difficult law because it is based on hearsay. He said, she said that someone said something bad about the prophet, and then that leads to the persecution of particularly religious minorities in the country. And yet we don't see the Supreme Court and the high courts intervening to clean up the prosecutions and interpret the laws in a way that might actually lead to some more kind of fairness and equity.
All right, we'll leave it there. Dr. Nazimullah, you are off the hot seat. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you for being with us. Please tune in next month for our next edition of The Hot Seat.